Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means. Time for a little bit more confirm and send, but let's take a look at the market. Even the S&Ps up $6.75, the middle of the range for the night. NASDAQ up 100, also around the middle of its range, maybe a little bit higher than middle. Russell the Bucker down $7 and change. It was the leader in the clubhouse yesterday, and the Dow down 46. Volatility in by 5 cents, trading 1575. And bonds trading near their lows, 1401. A 24 tick range so far, which is an average-ish by its implied volatility range, but it's had some good two-side action. I mean, just about 4 minutes ago, they were trading about 7-8 ticks higher than they are right now. Bitcoin hanging out at 66,000 and change. Oil down 10 cents with a tight range today, almost a point. And gold down $6.50. Silver basically unchanged. Let's take a look at some of the movers today. Boeing, for one, is up around $6. Tesla, for another, is up around $16. Yes, $16, trading 160 and change. And I know you didn't do anything in ENPH, but would you like to know what it's doing?
I did.
Oh, you did do a little something in there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only down around $6 or so. So
yeah, that stock usually kills me, but I have a very
expected move. It was down lower earlier.
Yeah, I have a very wide strangle on in there, which is the 85-150.
Remember,
it owes me a lot of money, so I'm going to make a little tiny bit back today on earnings. I'm going to make money on all the earnings days today, so a little bit, whatever.
Meta, IBM, to name a few, Royal Caribbean, Caterpillar, Ford.
Sure.
Honeywell.
Yeah, today the bonds have had a huge range. I mean, I bought them at 01, 02 and sold them at 10, just bought them back. I'm trying to buy some at 31.
Yeah, and just in the last 5 minutes or so. You're right.
Yeah, they've been all over the place. Scalped them yesterday, so hopefully we get a good scalping day. The bonds are, I'm for some reason way more comfortable scalping bonds right here than I am scalping.
Well, you have a directional bias in them. You like buying. You like buying the dip in.
Well, I sold S&Ps last night, but I scratched them.
Johnny.
Yeah, but they were back this morning. I could have sold them again. Yeah, there was nothing much there. Anyway, these are emails that came into us overnight. We got a packed show today. Jacob will be on the show. Scott will be on the show, and we've got. What's your assumption coming up as well? So lots and lots. It's 7:56 Central Time. We're in Chicago. What is cost to carry? These are emails that came into us overnight from viewers all over the world. If you don't know, we get about a crazy number of emails per day, 5,000 or 6,000, believe it or not, between emails and chats and other things like that. We answer them all. We are a very strange firm in that.
Day and night, most times. Here you are buying bonds under 114.
31. Why is my ding so loud?
you're a little voyeuristic like that. I don't know what I can tell
you. So it was really funny. Yesterday I was doing an interview with somebody, and podcast interview, and it'll be broadcast soon. And his last question was, what are your favorite? He goes, he interviews a lot of people in finance. He goes, I always ask this question. What are your favorite? What's your favorite expression, or what do you like to hear in finance more than anything else? Like, what's your favorite, you know, two, three ding. Words? What?
Ding.
You know what I said?
What?
You're filled.
You're filled.
Yeah, because he goes, everybody else has something else, like about risk and whatever. He goes, you're the first person that ever said you're filled. He goes, I've only done like 100 interviews. Yeah.
That's good.
What is cost to carry? I've heard you talk about that before, but I'm not sure I understand it. Is it for both stocks and futures?
Sure. Yeah. Cost to carry is just how much money something takes to control an investment. I mean, think of cost to carry. You can think about if you own a home or you've ever financed a car. The cost to carry would be the interest rate versus the money that you're putting up for the car, where you could use it someplace else or the house someplace.
Yeah, the easiest way to explain
interest
this.
Expenses, margins, whatever you know.
The easiest way to explain
storage
this.
Storage cost could be.
Easiest way to explain this is in the business we're in, it's not about how much money you have to put up to buy something. It's about how much money, either opportunity cost or interest you pay to hold that position. Right. So if you trade options, there's no borrowing, there's no cost to carry. It's all included. There's nothing there. If you trade something like stock, just as an example, let's say you buy $100 worth of stock. And you only have to put up $50 if you want to. You can put up the whole $100. There's no cost to carry, except your opportunity cost. But there's no cost to carry. If you only want to put up $50, then there's a cost to carry on the other $50. Like, you don't get to buy $100 worth of stock for $50. You have to actually pay for the other $50. You just don't put the money.
Sure.
In the futures world, the cost to carry is built into the futures price. So if you want to buy, for example, one S&P future, which is $250,000 worth of stock, you only have to put up like $15,000 to buy it. But you
sounds like a great deal. Like somebody's giving you.
Sounds like a great deal, except that $235,000 of carry costs minus the dividends that those stocks pay is built into the futures price. That's cost to carry. Let's go to the next slide. Under what circumstances would you prefer a ratio spread over a strangle?
A ratio spread over a strangle. If I'm directional, if I have a directional bias, I'm going to probably go with the ratio spread over the strangle. So a directional bias would be my, if I was bullish, I'd be doing a put ratio. If I was bearish, I'd be doing a call ratio over a strangle. They both like high implied volatility. Every strategy we do likes high implied volatility. Strangle's more delta neutral. Ratio has a lot more delta.
I would do a ratio spread when, just like Tony said, when implied volatility rank is super high, just like you would for a strangle, but when I was a little bit more directional. So if I was bullish and a stock was beaten up a lot, I would do a put ratio spread. If I was bearish and the stock was, you know, hyperbolic or something, I might do a call ratio spread. I prefer put ratio spreads, generally speaking. Let's go to the next slide. I'm slightly confused on how you decide to size your trades. Are you using IVR as a guide to size?
No, I use my account for the guide to my size. Try to keep everything, you know, under that, let's just call it 3% threshold of buying power.
You know, it's interesting, but
I'm naked.
When we size the amount of money that we use, we tend to use like different levels of the VIX to help us, you know, decide how much money we want to pour in the market. But when we talk about actual trade size, we really don't, unless we feel super strongly about certain underlying, you know, being oversold or over whatever.
Liquidity would be a reason.
I mean, yeah, but we don't use, generally speaking, all my positions are relatively close to the same size. I don't really use IVR as a guide. Let's go to the next slide. So something struck me quite clearly from yesterday's market measure, sleeping in on zero DTs that Jacob put together. And I wanted to run it by you before experimenting with real money. Is it profitable to buy long zero DT straddles at 12 p.m. Central Time and let them expire? This would be a nice long-term strategy based on yesterday's market measure, right? Because we showed in yesterday's market measure that if you put on straddles...
Oh, he's doing the opposite.
He's doing the opposite. We showed that if you put on straddles starting at noon in the zero DTs, that over time, okay, not every day or anything like that,
sure,
but over time, the number, if you buy them was positive, if you sell them was negative.
That's right.
So the question is, can you wait this one out? Because you got to take some big winners out of that group.
Of course, of course. And if the market does exactly what the research had shown the prior year, yeah, I guess the answer would be yes. I mean, I couldn't do it. I mean, I don't think I'd be able to withhold or withstand the amount of losses. But, I mean, yeah, net, it became positive. I say yeah.
This is really interesting because I wrote back to this person and said, you know, sure, you can try it. If you want to try it, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Because the over a long haul, if that means you have to have some big winners because you're going to lose way more than you're going to win.
Sure.
But over the long haul, these numbers came out to be negative if you're selling and positive if you're buying. So you can try it. But I wouldn't do it, but you can try it.
Sure.
But you're going to have to do it for a long time to make sure it works.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if it would have worked yesterday if you started at noon. Probably not. Anyway, let's go to the next slide. In the past, you said the SPY moves based on what the ES is doing. That's correct. But what if there's no futures product? What about something like KRE, the banking index? Does the ETF trade off supply and demand, or does it trade off the underlying components?
It trades off of the products that make up KRE, ultimately gives you the price of KRE.
So exactly. It trades off the underlying components of KRE. Now, of course, supply and demand plays a role, but supply and demand is only because
it's the same with SPY.
Yeah,
ES moves faster.
Yeah, there's obviously going to be an arb, and if you can supply and demand will keep the components in line. But the reality is that who's ever making markets, who's ever putting together the KRE, you know, the ETF for KRE, and there's lots of companies that all that is what they do. They keep those components. They basically keep a program going where the components are trading here, the ETF is trading here, and if they can buy the components or sell the components and then buy or sell the ETF and lock in the money, that's what they'll do that all day long. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps everything in line. That's called index arbitrage. And there's so much money chasing index arbitrage, it's very hard to do. But if you're the leader and you have the best technology and you have the most money, you know, you can essentially, in some cases, you know, you can specialize in different kinds of you know, index arb or banking arb like that.
Yep.
But that's what keeps it in line, the underlying components. Let's go to the next slide. And the last one, does your trade size change when you're trading earnings? Does it matter depending on if you're trading defined or undefined risk?
No, I don't think it really does. Size really doesn't change, no, for earnings, especially in the liquid products like a Tesla last night or a Boeing or maybe Meta today. I don't think the size changes. It doesn't for me.
We don't
do the daily options. Now, you know, maybe if I was doing the daily or the weekly options that are going to expire for earnings, I might reduce my size. I'm going out to May or June. I'm probably keeping the same size.
Well, since we're on earnings here, John, I'm going to pull something up in a second. But does the trade size change? Not really. Sometimes we will get a little, you know, frisky, and we may do something a little bit more. Sometimes I'll do something less because I just don't trust the underlying. But for the most part, our trade size doesn't change very much, whether it's defined or undefined, whether it's earnings or not earnings. I mean, consistency is what keeps us around. And so, yeah, we tend to not change that much. Now, speaking of earnings, yesterday afternoon, we didn't get to this, but I wanted to. Yesterday, Cherry Picks came out. This is something that Nikki and Mike Reckentine and Dr. Data put together on a weekly basis. This is a free quantitative newsletter that we have. It goes out every Tuesday. And what's interesting here is, can you scroll down a little bit? So we covered kind of like the weightings in the NASDAQ because a lot of people send us emails. Can you scroll down just a little bit more, John? And what impacts the NASDAQ the most? Those are kind of the top, I think it's 7 stocks in there. Mm-hmm. And so you can see kind of the stocks that have the most impact on the NASDAQ and all the weightings and everything like that. And then
over 22 quarters, I believe. I'm just doing it from memory. I can't see it.
Okay. But then if you go on the next slide, we kind of, can you scroll down a little bit? Just a little bit. So what we start to do here is show all the earnings. And like for today, you know, we have all the symbols, whether it's pre or post, you know, pre-market or post-market, all the information. But what's interesting about this is we also show on the last 4 quarters, that's the middle column there. And we also highlight the ones that have moved way outside kind of the expected range. Like on here, on the slide you're looking at right now, I think it's ENPH. Yeah, ENPH, you can see it there. It's highlighted in green. The last earnings, it moved 19%. Now, I'm not suggesting that that means this EMPH is going to move again if you have a huge move. But that's why I said yesterday I hate EMPH because I just that one moved.
You have memory.
Because I have a memory, yes. Mm-hmm. But everything's on here from, so we do description, earnings dates, earnings time, IV rank, implied volatility, underlying, what happened the last 4 quarters, and then overnight price moves and everything else. There's a ton of information on here. So if you wanted everything into a simple spreadsheet, and boom. Yep. And all the earnings plays, everything in there, the guys did an amazing job. And again, and there's also a downloadable spreadsheet in here, and you can go through everything. And like I said, it's all free. If you haven't signed up for Cherry Picks yet, no harm, no foul. You know, again, all our stuff is free. Cherry Bomb every single day. I write it on Sunday nights. TP writes it on Monday through Thursday. And the Cherry Picks, Nikki and Mike put that together, goes out every Tuesday. And there's so much stuff in here. So if you want something quantitative, sign up for both of them. You can delete them, obviously, if you don't want them.
Sure.
But Cherry Picks is all our quantitative stuff, and the other one's kind of more of a, you know, just me telling stories or TP finding trade ideas.
Very good. So let's take a quick 90-second break and come back. We've got more Option Jive. We've got more Tasty Live with an Option Jive next.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered